Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Tell the Others. I'm Heidi Rogers, and I'm so excited today to be joined by the lovely Sharon Collin, who is a ADHD coach and all sorts of other things that she's going to tell you about the other parts of her business and what she does and how she supports families. Sharon and I were introduced through a mutual friend who knows Sharon, knows me, and went, you guys should talk. You guys should be connected in some way because you do a lot of similar stuff. So we were connected. And as soon as we met and had our first Zoom chat, I was like, oh, we're going to be friends and we're going to do a lot of collaborations together, I think. So I'm excited to have you here. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for our chat today.
Yay. So why don't we start with, I love always asking people why, you know, why do you do what you do? Why did you get into this? So I think that's probably my first question. And I know, but I think it's neat for you to tell everybody else who doesn't know you. Why did you get into this space and ADHD coaching? Maybe let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that could be a lot of different things. And there's a lot of people out there who go rogue. And so maybe people don't really know what that means. And then also as a family, like if you're coaching parents in a family space, what does that look like? You know, so yeah. So why'd you get into this and what's a bit more of your jam?
Well, so my origin story, and, you know, like hold on to your seats for this one because it's a bit of a wild ride. I married an incredible man called Anthony, and he is super hyperactivity presentation of ADHD. And I fell in love with his brain. Like, he can do things so quickly. I've always been fascinated with how his brain works, like his ability to problem solve. And he is, like, I lovingly call him my resident cyclone. He blows in, like, causes chaos, then blows out again. But I've always been completely in awe of what his brain can do. And we went on to have three beautiful kids. And when I was talking to Anthony about his story of ADHD, his journey wasn't one of people falling in love with him because of his ADHD. His journey was trauma and being banned from the classroom and being excluded from all birthday parties and, you know, fighting his way through school and having a really hard time. And then, you know, I'm looking at my three gorgeous boys who are very similar to my husband, and I'm thinking, oh, that can't be their story. That can't be what's going to go on for them. And so then I went into this kind of obsessive research mode about ADHD, learning everything I could about it, because I had been exposed to ADHD. We have it in our family as well. And I knew a little bit about it, but it was, you know, like the 1990s, 80s representation of ADHD where we didn't know what we do now. And so I learned everything that I could. And what I was doing is I was trialing different parenting strategies on my family, my poor family. Like, I put them through so many weird experiments. They're going to write a book about me one day and it's not going to be very complimentary. So I do all these weird experiments and all these parenting strategies and try it out for them. And I was documenting what was working because it was really important to me, because I'm a procedures person, to experiment and try things and try and find a way for our family to have a, air quotes, functional family, right? Because even though we were doing so many therapies and special diets and neurofeedback, we were doing like everything. We spent over $30,000 in the first year of my eldest son's diagnosis. You can imagine, like, we were doing everything. I'm proactive. I'm like, let's get this stuff. Like, let's get it sorted, right? Let's support. Like, let's throw everything at it. Anyway, what I learned is that a lot of those things really helped, but our home life sucked. Our home life was awful. And I was really starting to feel the pressure of it. So we've got, you know, like multiple kids, you know, a husband who hasn't been given the tools at the same, like at the same time, and just chaos. Chaos ensued. And I ended up burning myself out and getting sick. I got diagnosed with autoimmune disease, something I have to live with today. And it really is a bit of a bugger. But what then, what how I coped with that then is I moved over. It wasn't a nice to have, like a functional life together wasn't a nice to have at this point. Now it is life or death because this autoimmune condition is going to take away my mobility. And who is going to support my kids if I can't support them? So we then moved into a very proactive space of like, okay, we need to take steps. We need practical tools to support my family and we need them to work stat. And luckily, we found so I then went on and trained formally as an ADHD coach and, you know, did all that formal study. And luckily, we found a great way of making our family work for us. Now, it doesn't look like everyone else's family, and I don't care about that. And it might not even look good on Instagram. It's not Instagram worthy, but it feels nice to be in. And everyone has a space here at the table, and we work collaboratively together. And now I have the best job in the whole world. I went and did my family's training with ADHD coach, and now I get to help other families do the same. And it's so fun and so cool. And it's a journey full of hope. Because, you know, I get to live it. I'm formally qualified in it, but I also get so much enjoyment from seeing other families improve the way their family functions.
Wow. I always think that people who have their own story or own experience with something are like the best people to work with. Like, if you're gonna get a divorce and, have a divorce lawyer, like, use someone who's been there themselves. Like, you're gonna have a baby, see a woman. Like, I don't know. I just think, like, the gift of tackling problems and walking through life whilst walking alongside someone who's your guide, but also like a fellow traveler is like the best, I think. Because so many times, especially with ADHD, I think positive parenting strategies don't work. Positive parenting traditional systems or hacks or whatever don't work. And I think a lot of times parents think there's something wrong with them or they suck or the kids suck or whatever. They just think, like, I think it gets internalized. And so when you have ADHD yourself or you have ADHD in your family and you've lived it and you've seen it, like, you would know immediately if you were to go to, like, a, I don't know, traditional parenting website for ideas of, like, say a launch pad, where all your stuff is to get out of the house in the day, backpacks or whatever. You know, and I know that it's like, that's hilarious, some of the ideas that people come up with, because you're like, oh, sweetheart, that ain't gonna work in an ADHD house. Like, that is just, that's not happening. So I love that you can, like, call that stuff out and sort of save parents time of like, oh, no, can't do that. You're gonna waste your time. If it's not out, if it's not in line of sight, it is forgotten about. So, like, there's just little things like that you would just know because you've lived it and you have three kids. It's not like you live in a box and you just have these great ideas. You're actually like implementing them and then going, that really does not work. So, oh, wow, that's awesome. And also, I think motivating, I think, for all of us, because your motivation or part of your motivation in the circumstances around the autoimmune condition and that impacting your mobility, whilst we all might not be able to have that same experience, the experience though that we all can identify with, I think, as parents is we need to make ourselves obsolete. And that's part of the gig, right? Is to, like, empower our kids and teach them enough stuff so they can go live as functional adults. And I love that you had the kind of, you have the grown-up version of your kids in your husband to see, oh, this is what happens when you're undiagnosed, or this is what happens when you don't have support or you don't get what you need, because that then is even greater levels of insight for you to have as you work with them and coach them, because really they're your first clients, aren't they? Like, they're the first people that you were coaching.
And we've kind of done the older generations with ADHD a bit of disservice. Like, think about all the females getting late diagnosed. They've missed out on all intervention. And even, you know, our typical hyperactive presentation that probably got a diagnosis, we still didn't give them anywhere to go with that, right? Like, I remember walking out of my first son's diagnosis appointment with a photocopied pamphlet about ADHD. And I was like, that's it. That's all the support. I was like waiting for this support to be offered. I was waiting for to be surrounded by some sort of beautiful community. And all I got was this photocopied pamphlet that was generic about ADHD. And I can remember going to the car feeling like I was going to cry because I was like, okay, what? How am I going to keep this kid alive? Like he's literally on the roof. I don't have the skills to support him or the skills to give him what he needs, and feeling so lost with that. And now, now obviously we know so much more. We are in a better position to be able to support our gorgeous kids with ADHD and really give them the tools because that's what it's about. Like, it's not just about going like, using neuroaffirming language or like even going like, you've got a different brain. It's amazing and being all positive about that. But what I get to be in the position of is working with adults also who are like, this is the stuff that I wish I had learned. Like this would have made my life so much easier for all those years. Like if someone had have given this to me as a child, I would now know and it wouldn't cause me to trip up so much because they tend to be, the ADHD brain is an interest and novelty-based brain, right? So they tend to be very good, borderline genius at the stuff that interests me. But it's the everyday life skill stuff that totally trips them up and sucks all their energy. And then they can't do the stuff that they're gifted in because, like they're just getting so bogged down in the everyday stuff. So if we can spare them some of that discomfort, buy them time and capacity so they can do their zone of genius, like perfect. That's the missing link that we need to be providing in that support.
And I think one of the things I just heard as you were talking is like a theme that I just picked up was shame. And I know for me, being a late diagnosed ADHDer in my 40s, that shame, like shame, I think it's probably why I love the topic of shame so much, because it's like such a bestie, because I spent so much of my life in shame, but especially academically, like in school, always thinking I was stupid, lazy, just not very smart. I never thought I was smart because of how the academic sort of institution is set up, is not really built for an ADHD brain. But lots of things like being, forgetful or messy or disorganized or always being late, like all of these things that happen thousands of times a day for an ADHDer especially, that are just constant micro moments of shame, 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 shame. And I'm bad, I'm stupid, I'm, not a good friend because I was late, or the teacher thinks you're disrespecting them because you're late, or because you forgot your homework or whatever. But just constantly feeling bad about yourself and then not knowing why and not knowing how to change it. And like you said, with the tools, leaving the doctor's office, like wanting to cry, I think that is such a chronic ADHD experience of just like always wanting to cry or just go to sleep or like just like, hide somewhere because everything just feels so overwhelming. And I love people like you that have a procedures or like a systems brain, because that's like such a huge part of what my brain is missing. And it's so, I'm so glad that we all exist and there's, variety, because yeah, my brain doesn't think like that. And some stuff is so obvious and is so simple that your brain thinks of that it's like, oh my gosh, yes, tell me, how do I get out the door on time? Or what is a better system for, school lunches? I don't know. Like there's just a lot of, so I think the work that you do is amazing ADHD stuff, but I actually think the gift that you're giving people is actually far deeper than that, that it's you're helping. It's like that's what should be on like your business cards, is like, I'm a shame avoider. I help people avoid feelings of shame. That's my professional title. You're a shame consultant, that you help people create systems and stuff in their life so they just get to feel less shame. And like, that's rad. I'd love to have 10 less moments of shame a day, And that's what you do. I think it's so cool.
And it's about like not me telling them what the system is, right? Like, because there's so many things on the internet and TikTok about like this ultimate. We don't operate like that. What we do is partner up together to discover the right system because it's not really important what my family does. It's what's unique to that family. That's the bit, and that's the part that excites me so much about my job because we get to work together. It's collaborative. And so we can go like what other elements? And the good thing is when you're discovering systems and when you're working on this sort of stuff, is it turns out that there's really clear patterns about what works for each family. So you can, once you get one system nailed, you kind of go, okay, now what, we're going to pull elements from that system into these other systems because we already know that XYZ works. And so then it starts to have a domino effect of like creating other bits of capacity, creating other bits of time. And I never know 100% where that's going to go, but I know that these fundamentals of like viewing it through ADHD lens of going once I start to get that traction and start to see those dominoes falling over and it all clicking into for that family, that's the bit that and you start to see the relief coming over the parents' face of like, oh, we've got something that works, like we're going for that momentum. It's just so exciting and so engaging for me that I mean it's a little bit selfish in me saying like I do it because I get so much energy from it as well. Like that momentum drives me forward and really propels me to keep going.
I totally get that. I mean, that resonates as a therapist. I love my job and it's a bucket filler for me. I totally get that. It is so rewarding and fulfilling to just help people, but like I think helping people in such practical ways is like one of the things that is just so missing. Especially in this space. Like when we were talking the other day about the Christmas preparation period and how it's so stressful, but especially for ADHD families, all of the activities and like just it's a lot of executive function for December. And
A lot.
when you were saying that in your membership, you had an event the other night where it was everybody on Zoom and like getting organized for Christmas, I was like mind blown that it wasn't like a workshop where you were like telling people this is how organization works. It was like, nope, get out your papers and like we are writing lists and we are organizing stuff. Like you were doing the doing, which is again what is so hard often with ADHD is to actually sit down and do the thing. So to have that accountability, like I just think it's brilliant what you've built. So if we want to start, I guess, with do you want to just explain coaching and like how me as a therapist versus a coach versus a, I don't even know what all the other things are. There other things, ADHD consultant, like I don't even know what all the things are. Yeah, what that means. And then, like, if I was, you know, a client and I was having my first session, I'm assuming we would talk about what my problem points are, but like, then what? Like, how do you sort of view clients or how do you kind of tackle it or where do you go
That's a
at the
great
beginning?
question. And I want to really preface this by saying I'm a credentialed coach. So anyone who's looking for an ADHD coach, because the coaching industry is unregulated. Anyone can call themselves a coach. And what we have now, because ADHD is so popular, is just people deciding that they're ADHD coaches. So I just want to flag that. A credentialed coach is someone who has done ADHD specific training to and is ICF, that's International Coaching Federation, accredited. Now you need those things. So there's only three schools in the world that I'm aware of that do that ICF accredited training. ADCA is where I've trained. And so what that is our regulatory body that, makes sure that we're not, stuffing stuff up, right? And we have to exam, we have to credential, like we have, it's a full-on process. And we want to have that ADHD specific training. So what we are taught is we are taught to view concerns with an ADHD lens. We are taught to partner up with the person with ADHD. So we're like a person that walks beside you talking about what that is. And then we are also trained in executive function skills and challenges that we know are common with ADHD. So the training is quite intensive. So we know that often people with ADHD to varying degrees struggle with emotional regulation, frustration tolerance, short-term memory recall, task prioritization, all of those things that we see on like the Brown model of executive function, which I love because it's so easy to understand. And then we're taught to support that. And so the next level that you can go to is that families training, which is what I've done. And every coach has their niche. So if you're looking for an ADHD coach, the website is ADHD Coach Australasia, I think it's .org or .net. And if you Google that, you can't be on that directory without being a properly trained, credentialed coach. So that's why that's where the doctors, that's where psychiatrists, that's where everyone goes for that directory. And so what that means to be a family's coach is it means that you are looking at the whole family unit. So it gives you are able to work with children directly, which I don't tend to do. I tend to work with the parents. I love I love the results that I can get with the parents who are there all of the time. But you're looking at the whole family dynamic. I'm looking at how things work, how that family interacts with each other, where we need to put our energy first, because we can't tackle everything all at once. That's too overwhelming. My job is to take overwhelm away, not give more. And then coming in with anything that's capacity building, anything that's like a structure that's going to buy time and energy, because these families, the ones that I work with, are often really burnt out. And so if we throw everything all at once, whew, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to do one thing at a
Totally.
time and systematically go through it. So how that process works, because you asked that question, is they would contact me, we would do a discovery call. I would assess in that free discovery call what that family requires. And sometimes it's like, no, I need to refer them to a person like you. No, I need to refer them to a developmental PD, like, or a psychiatrist. So, I'm very clear about what I actually do and what I'm trained in. I'm not trained in trauma. So I'm not going to support someone with trauma, because that's your job. I'm going to refer them to the right person. But if someone says, like, I just can't get out the door in the morning, I feel like I'm always running, but I'm not getting anywhere, that's like, I'm like, oh, you're in the right spot for that, right? I'm like, you need systems. I'm the systems queen, right? This is where how my brain works. And so what we then do is we have our first intake session. So we get a detailed history and we work out exactly what we're going to target. Because I'm so task orientated and I'm goal focused, I want to know exactly where the success markers are. So where are the friction points that we're going to put some scaffolding around? And then one by one, each session after, or via any of our memberships or any of our products, we hit it. So we make sure we reach those goals. We don't stop until we get the right thing in place, not just temporarily, because things work until they don't. But the actual, I love the quote, my favorite quote in the whole world is, you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your system. So having,
Say that again. Wait, you got to say that again.
you don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your system.
That's good.
It's
That's
James Clear
good.
that wrote that. And for me, that makes total sense, because we can have all sorts of goals and all sorts of things we want to do. I'll be happy when, I'll be like, when the kids are in school, like all of these things. But what we actually need is systems that catch us when things aren't going well. We know when, in most ADHD households, there's predictable problems getting thrown. These are predictable problems, are things that happen time, day in, day out. Like, every time we ask them to brush their teeth, we know that there's going to be this friction, right? So that's a predictable problem. If you're tensing your body in anticipation of even asking, you don't even know if they're going to throw that friction point that day, then that is a predictable problem. It needs some scaffolding around it. And we need to try differently. So we keep expecting people with ADHD to try harder out of their ADHD, and that really, really gets to me. We don't need to try harder. Everyone's already trying hard enough. The parents are trying hard enough. The kids are trying hard enough. Like, that's enough of that. Let's try differently. Let's be unique about it. Let's see what works for all of the people in the family, not just the child even. Like, let's see what works for everyone so we can have a happy life together. Because, like, let's face it, life is short. How quick are the years going? It's bloody Christmas already. I don't even know how this happened. We need to be able to have the right system so we can enjoy our time together, because it's sweet.
It's, I think you made such a good point there in saying, like, don't try harder. It's not about pretzeling and contorting yourself into like being someone you're not. Like, embrace this is who you are. This is what's hard for your brain, and then build systems around it that support it instead of trying to make you just become someone you're not. I remember when I first was learning about like out of sight, out of mind, and how that's an ADHD thing, and I didn't know that was a thing. And finding like, oh, that's why food will rot and go off that I can't see. Oh, that's why, like if where it is in the fridge, or that's why, like, say laundry will just get totally on top of me if I can't see the hamper. I like the hamper to be like away in a closet so I don't have the visual clutter, but it actually doesn't work for me. I have to have the hamper out so I see as I walk past it every day, oh, that's filling up that's a load. Now it's time. But I won't ever think of it on my own. I remember even something simple like labeling all of my drawers. I could never remember. I still to this day can't remember where socks, pants, whatever is in the drawers. And I thought that was just me being scatterbrained or whatever. And then a friend was like, well, why don't you just make labels? And I was like, oh, labels, that's a whole, gotta get the label maker out. And she's like, just do it with masking tape. And I was like, oh, yeah, I could do that. And now if you came to my house right now, it's like everything just has masking tape labels on everything because everything has to have a place. But it's like I stopped kind of going, oh, I should just be able to remember where stuff is, or I should just remember to do the laundry. But it's the visual cues. So it's like what you're saying is, no, don't contort, build the thing around you. And that then makes sense, the why you have to do it different for every family. Like there's not just a sort of one size fits all. Yeah, that makes sense.
And
That makes sense.
I think that's really great bringing up that point about the inline of sight. And also, when we're talking about house and clutter, Pinterest has a lot to answer for, and Instagram has a lot to answer for, because we all think we need this like beautiful Instagram-worthy pantry or whatever. But I would really encourage people to look at one-handed systems. If something's on a lid and you have to pull something out to put the thing in, it's already doomed. Right, one-handed systems only. You need to be able to do it with one hand while you're holding your coffee, while you're doing the other thing. Like, it needs to be a one-handed system. Really pare it back.
Gosh, that is so, I've never heard that before of the one-handed system, but that is so, I'm just thinking of all of the ways of like systems I've tried in the past that have failed. Why? Because it was not one-handed. It required too much. Even hand lotion. I wanted to put hand lotion next to my bed. So before bed, I would put on hand lotion because my hands are dry all the time. But I had a lotion that had a twist-off lid. Never happened.
It's a barrier.
I got a pump one. Happens every night because it's so much easier. And I think this is what is so hard for non-ADHDers to understand is like, what do you mean it's hard, or that it's too hard to take a lid off, or like eating. I've always thought with eating is so annoying and it's such a pain. And if only food could just be in pills or smoothies, like. It's because it stops it all makes sense to me now, but all my whole life it never made sense to me. But things like that of realizing, oh, I need to just like embrace that this is how I am and put systems in place. So the stuff that I cook is easily reheatable or is fine cold or is in little bite-sized things to grab. But it's taken me time to get there. So I love that you're teaching people this too. Like, gosh, can you imagine for, adult ADHDers to have learned when they were seven because their parents told them, you really got to have a one-handed system, buddy. Like you have to have stuff that you can only reach with one hand, or like you're not going to organize that dude, that cupboard is never going to be organized because you don't have a one-handed system. Like that is so brilliant.
And I would love for people to, how you said there that you were kind of saying to yourself, I should be able to. Like, anytime someone says should, I am very wary, right? Because should is like this, like, I should be able to, like, I'm that's that trying harder mentality that we don't want to. Like, and so what we want to do is we want to change, we want to flag that should as a little marker, a little red flag that that's something we need a system around. So if you're saying should, I should be able to, like, my child should, that's comparison. And what we need to do is have a system around it. That's just a little flag that we need a system. And one thing I did want to point out there too is about the parents modeling that point that you raised there about, how much easier it would have been if, when we were seven. The time to act on this stuff is when your kids are young and model it to them. Because, I'm sure our listeners would relate. Like, people with ADHD don't love being told what to do, right? They don't love it. They
Yep.
don't love it. But what they do learn from is role play modeling. Like, if you can model something, like, the good news is that they learn so spectacularly from that. So this is a little side note, but like, parents, don't make grand announcements for your house. I used to do this all the time. I'm so guilty for it because I get so excited about some sort of new strategy. So I walk into my family, like, use a shoe rack, for example. I'll be like, family, from now on, I found the thing that is going to improve our life. And from now on, we are going to use this thing that I bought from IKEA. And all of my kids with ADHD and oppositional defiance just clock that and go, we are never using that ever. Do not make grand announcements. Just go in and start using the thing without making a demand, and they will copy what you do.
Oh, I love it. That is so true. And it's such an easier way to teach, isn't it? Just modeling, because we don't have to sit down at a table and like get our lap book, our laptops out and like go over stuff. It's like you're just watching me do it every day. Like my mom had a calendar in the kitchen, and because it was the 80s, and she would just write everything on that calendar and appointments and birthdays and whatever. And it was like it was the hub. And she lived and died by that calendar. And I'm the same digital though now, my Google calendar. But that is something I realized that she was coaching me, modeling for me. Like you can't hold it in your brain. You have to get it on paper or put it somewhere else. And I just think of all the stuff that I do in my house now, or that I've learned in books that I've read and stuff about organizing and just living. Because I think that's one of the things that's so hard with ADHD is it impacts just living, like daily life and functioning and hygiene and grocery shopping and cooking and cleaning. Like there's just so much basic stuff. And I think that's why it is so frustrating and so hard to live in an ADHD household, because it's not like, I don't know, it's not like a something that is outside of the home. It's an always present thing. And you were saying earlier about the like, it's your brain is it's a superpower and ADHD is so cool. Like that pisses me off when people say that, because I'm like, dude, I
Now,
say that again.
almost like toxic positivity now, like, yeah, it's kind of not acknowledging the struggle. It's like someone, when I talk to someone about my autoimmune disease, someone goes, have you tried yoga? And I'm like, oh, if yoga could have fixed this, like, I would be
Totally.
fixed already. Like, it's kind of minimizing what some people with ADHD really go through. And we know, like, ADHD is a spectrum, right? So there's some people that are like little bit, and it's like they're going, okay, they don't need the support, but there's a lot of people that need the support. It's more than just a concentration issue of what, like, it was branded as, like, school improved concentration issue. It affects executive function, so like that needs a lot of support, and we're not doing the community a service if we just gloss over it by saying that all the positives. Like, there are so many positives. Like, I fell in love with the positives, right? But there are also challenges that need support, and we very much view executive function skills like a muscle that can be built, and it's not building with some sort of generic solution. It's building it with something that works for that individual, like it, so that they can allow their personality and the parts of their ADHD that are a strength to shine, and it doesn't burn them out in the process.
That really resonates with me, because I think about like if I were to go back and do school now, or like how I did uni, and I did like I went to school for like 8 years. Like I was at uni for such a long time for doing, my post grad and graduate stuff. And if I could go back and start primary school with all of the stuff that I eventually learned, and basically they were hacks. I just didn't know it because I wasn't diagnosed until, only a few years ago. Wow, what a difference school would have been, like, and how much better it would have been for my self-esteem and confidence and all that sort of stuff. But I think the thing I love about what you are talking about in terms of training kind of executive function skills into a family or into a child is so cool, because it's all learnable. Like, say, labeling stuff or one-handed systems or having stuff that's in line of sight. Like all of those little, they're little hacks, but they add up then to have a whole day where you're less frustrated or exhausted at the end of it. You have more success. And I think the greatest thing, I think, and why I've been more successful in life, and then I think professionally in the last, say 5 or 10 years, is simply because I've dialed it in a bit better of how to put systems and stuff around me to survive and like thrive. So I often wonder, like, wow, if I'd been diagnosed as a kid or met you when I was a kid and my family was doing those things, I wonder what I would be doing or where I would be, because I feel like I have become my best self now because I'm not wasting so much time drowning in tasks and chores because I have systems now. And then I'm also not drowning in depression and anxiety and all of the other lovely things that tend to go with ADHD. Because I have all of these systems, and so all of the hard stuff is sorted, which then reveals the superpower, the magic, the cool stuff about my brain. But my brain can only do all of its cool stuff and the magic when it's not visually cluttered, or when, I know that the laundry is on top of, or I have food in the fridge. But I have to get all that stuff done until my awesomeness can show, you know?
So much power in what you just said, because by discovering what works for you, not only can you advocate for yourself because you can say, like, this is what I need to succeed. I know that my brain is powerful, but like I need to do XYZ to succeed. It's better for your self-esteem because you're kind of going, like, you're not just constantly getting run over by the mundane, boring stuff. You can go, like, this is what I need to succeed, and that's fine. We're viewing it with curiosity. You know, like we're just going, okay, this is what I need. And how beautiful to know that. Like, there's so many people running through life that are getting bowled over by all of this like mundane, boring stuff. Like, I don't know if you know, but like we absorb now 74 gigabytes of information per day, which is more than our ancestors did in their entire lifetime. So you add ADHD to that mix, and you know, no wonder people are feeling chronically overwhelmed. Like, this is not good for anybody. We're absorbing so much more data, and like at the start of my son's school term, we got 47 school notes from all the schools. Like 47, that's a full-time job, right? To imagine how much executive function that requires to keep track of all of that. So now, whereas systems before, like, or having the right structure in place was nice to have, and like it was like all nice, like it was almost like a morale boost to be labeled as organized. Now it's, to me, it's morally neutral. Now it's having the right system in place is what we need to survive this modern day life. Like, it's survival now.
Amen, amen, amen. I often wonder in my job as a therapist, if we could, if part of someone seeing me was that they saw you as well, and you came to their house and did a consult and spent a week with them, getting all the systems and stuff in place and figuring out where all the friction points were. A lot of pain points I know would lessen for families. And but what I kind of my brain always goes to more is self-esteem and confidence, because that is I'm so big on that, because that is, especially with children and building it in children, because that's life trajectory foundational stuff that you are setting someone up, or you're not setting someone up, if their self-esteem or their confidence is in the toilet, because their room is always a bomb site. They can never remember their stuff. They're always late. They're always forgetting everything. That's just, it is so helpful for people. And I guess maybe people don't realize that, of what it means when you can get on top of stuff. I guess we all can identify with that. We know what it feels like when you get on top of something, how good it feels, just that intrinsic motivation that lights up. The dopamine is just woo, because I finished that, or I accomplished that, or that looks clean. It's such a nice feeling. But I think when it's so hard to get that consistently, I don't know, it's like maybe you forget that it's possible, or that it can happen, because you're so stuck in the shame of beating yourself up that you can't do it like everyone else can. That I just love that you're showing people that there's another way. Like, you can work with how your brain is rather than working against it. You work with it and accommodate it, essentially, which I think people don't like that word.
But you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because what you're describing there is, you know, like that setting up of a system and feeling like, I don't know about you guys, but like every time I clean my car, like I'll get my car cleaned or whatever, I'm like, from now on, I am the type of person who has this clean car. Like, I will identify as this person who only has this spectacular clinker. And then, like,
Yeah.
within a week, it's gross again, right?
Yeah,
But
totally.
it's not just about ignition, which is like the setting up of the system. It's about momentum. And we've got to keep that going. And with black and white thinking, which is common with ADHD, which we
Yep.
know, like, we tend to be very good at the ignition part. Like, if we see some sort of inspiring video, we're going to Marie Kondo every room of our house. And like, we're going to do that. And that's the ignition part. But then when it drops and we fall to the level of our system, right? If that's not the right system, or perhaps, you know, there's something else, our attention has now gone to something else that's got more novelty. The tendency can be black or white. Oh, it's ruined. That's now off the table. And what I want to say is that my family motto is, as well as being kind, is to, when things come up, we handle it. When things come up, we handle it. If there's any point of friction, we're going to handle it. If we drop our pen, we pick it up. Like, we just handle things as life throws us things. There's no failure. There's just information. Now, what that information is, but that perhaps wasn't the right system to begin with, or that system needs to be tweaked. So that's not like something's off. So what we need to do is either resparkalize it and make it new, shiny and new, or there's something in there that's a barrier. So when we want to encourage a behavior, we take away barriers. And when we want to discourage a behavior for ourselves, we add barriers. And so it's so great to know and have that information and feedback that when the system drops, it doesn't mean anything about us, right? Like, we don't have to make that. We don't have to put that on a jacket and wear it around. It's just that we need to, like, resparklize or make it something else. We need to change it a little bit. We need to tweak it. It's just information. It's not failure. It's not all ruined. When things come up, we can.
I love that. And that's so loaded with compassion, which is what you need when you have a brain that's differently wired. Everyone just has to have more compassion. I wish we could put compassion into pills and, we'd be millionaires because it is, you just need to have so much compassion. So when you are looking at systems or, wanting to support a family, do you have some practical takeaways like that, even just the few things that we've mentioned so far of like one-handed systems? Are there some other kind of, I don't know, gold that you're like, this is pretty universal? Obviously, not everything is going to work for everyone, but are there some other things, or like labeling, other things that you're like, if families want five things to get started on making, their lives run easier, your top three, top five, whatever, of some stuff to look at? I loved what you said earlier about the shoulds, like whenever you hear yourself say, I should, whatever, looking at that and using that as like a pin marker that this is something we gotta change. I remember telling myself, I should be able to eat breakfast. I should be able to make enough time in the morning and to structure things so that I have time to have breakfast. I'm 44. Like, and I made peace with my breakfast thing a long time ago, mainly when I married a lovely person who kindly will make me a smoothie the night before. So there's smoothie, that are loaded and they're filling and they're healthy, and there's, fruits and vegetables. It's also how I get a lot of my vegetables, is loaded and ready in the fridge so that I can take it while I am driving to wherever I am late to, because then I at least get breakfast rather than not having breakfast for the majority of my life because I never had time. And so I think I love that. I'm going to go through my whole life and think of every time, where do I say the shoulds, or where do I do that with the kids that they should, whatever, because that says to me, this system is not working if we are shoulding ourselves. So yeah, what are some of your favorite tips and
Well,
tricks?
I'm going to go in there with five parenting tips, if that's okay, because I feel like
Great.
this leads people to discover what needs to be looked at. And
Love
we know
it.
there's some generic things that we know, like labeling, we know really, really works well. Anytime that you have to do something more than once, and if it's something that's hard for you, like, remove those barriers, like, make it as easy as can, just like you did with the labeling the drawers. But I think this is really good for identifying what it is. So, like, where those friction points come up, where those predictable problems come up. My first parenting tip is really to learn as much as you can about ADHD. There's so much misinformation out there. We know that America in the USA did a survey last year and about TikTok and ADHD, and 50% of the information about ADHD on TikTok is actually incorrect. So yeah, be careful about where you're consuming your content. We need to learn about ADHD, but also we need to learn about ADHD, how it relates to your family, because this is a thing that I see a lot of parents trip up on. They have ADHD themselves, and they assume that their child's ADHD, what works for them, is going to work for their child. Now, like if there's one thing I know about ADHD, it's situational, it's variable, and everyone's like, it doesn't come to the party alone, it brings friends. Like different people have different co-conditions going on. And we really need to honor that individual and how their brain works. And we don't want to make assumptions about what's going to work for them. The next one is go for the low-hanging fruit. Change your environment. What's the one thing that you can control easily without doing any sort of, intense psychological strategy? The low-hanging fruit is environment. So looking around your home, what is that? How can we tailor that to suit the individuals that are in that household? Now, this is where you come through with your labels, for some people, timers are like, so some people, timers are stressful. So I want to preface this. Other people thrive off a bit of urgency. Now, urgency and emergency, we tend to do very well. Pressure, no, pressure, no. Urgency and emergency is different. So things like I always put the washing on and then I walk away from it and I forget about it. Then something as simple as if you're okay with timers as a person, something as simple as these Amazon ones that count down. Now these are magnetic, they stick onto the front of your washing machine and you set the timer for how long it's going to go and these little buggers just keep going off until you go and get the thing, put it in the dryer, right? It's so good because you already had to get up there and by the time you go to switch it off, you're like, oh, I may as well. Now you might need more barriers, like depending on the individual, removed for that to actually work. But I just want to flag that as a little system. For we know it's a common thing. Everyone puts the washing machine on, walks away, or goes out, or whatever, and forgets about it. So that's just that little thing is enough of the system to get it to go into the dryer. So that's one little thing. So tailor the environment is my step two, because that's the easiest thing to control is our environment. And whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to look like a show home. It doesn't have to look like anyone else's home. It has to look like your home that works for you. Number three is really going at, I'm sure that you do this with your clients. Like we see behavior as communication, right? So something's not working. It's just communication that they don't have the skills yet. So if, when we turn our attention, that old saying, turning towards with compassion instead of turning away with judgment, we're just going, oh, okay, there's something that's going on. I wonder what's going on for them. I wonder what skill we need to support them with. Often it's just a skills deficit. And we can go, like, I hate that word deficit, but often it is. We just need to help them upskill whatever that is so they can have the confidence to advocate for themselves or create a system or whatever they need to be able to succeed in that situation. Because no one chooses to fail or struggle. Like, just no one does that. It's not human nature. We always choose the easy road. So what is it that we can make that road easier for them? Like, let's go with human nature. Human nature chooses the easy road. But something about that road is hard. So we need to work out what that is.
I think that's you just made me think of Ross Green and his book, The Explosive Child, which is, in the Bible realm of a lot of ADHD
It
families,
sure
I think. And when I first learned about lagging skills and unsolved problems, I was like, love this language, Ross. Like, that's exactly what it is. It's just a lagging skill and an unsolved problem. And identifying so many of those within myself as a kid and knowing how many times I don't want to be late. I don't want to be late. I hate being late, but I'm always late. And I don't like it either. And it's not that I don't respect your time, other person. It's nothing about you. It is completely about how the whole thing works. And I think when you identify it as it's just a lagging skill, Heidi, it's just an unsolved problem. It's a problem we haven't figured out yet. And then learning things like if I'm trying to calculate how long something's going to take, my brain wildly underestimates. And I have to go, whatever I think it is, I multiply it by three. And that is more likely what it's going to take. Or cramming too many things in the day. So instead of doing a list of 20 things that I totally could do today, I just pick one. And there's little, like you were saying, you view it more as a skill that you're trying to build. And so just say that I now multiply everything by three of how long something is going to take. Like even today, I have to go return something at the mall at Chadston. And I was like, that's only going to take me like 30 minutes. And I was like, Heidi, it's December. Like, you're not going to get in there, park, walk in, do the return, get like, you're not doing that. And like, you're nuts. You're delusional. So, but then when I went, I think it's going to take 30 minutes, I went, oh, multiply by three. Oh, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't have time for that. That's too long. So, but as you are saying, when something isn't working, you look at the behavior. The behavior is your communication, and that is going to tell you where there needs to be skill building. Is that right? Did I summarize that?
Yes.
Okay.
And I love that you were just describing there like being a time optimist. And I think it's confusing for people with ADHD because like their perception, a neurotypical person will go, I need to do this by this time. So they sequence backwards, like because their brain is modeled on importance. So they're like, this is important, we're going to sequence backwards. The ADHD brain isn't wired for that sequencing. So if you think about like how we triage what we're going to do and our tasks, if you picture that like a hospital room. And the nurse, you see at the start, like before you go into the hospital, you see this nurse and she's the triaging nurse and she decides how sick you are and what happens. So if you're like, you're really sick, you're going straight through. If you're like a little bit sick, you can sit and wait for a little while, but the action's going to happen quite quickly. If you're like, some people sit and wait for hours, right? She's triaged you as low importance. Now, the ADHD brain usually has a nurse who's like, come through, fine, all of you, come through, it's fine. We're all gonna be seen at the same time. Like the triaging nurse is very welcoming, and I love that for her. But what we want to do is we want to have like that little second question. You know how you're saying like you're actually questioning yourself. You're like, actually, I timed it by three. So what is that? Oh, okay, I can't see that. So that is you overriding that very friendly triaging nurse and just going, hey, like actually, that can't happen today. And that is like triaging and sequencing, which we need to like. It's a skill, right? Like it's nothing about us. It's just that your nurse is super welcoming and that's fine. That's fine. But we want to have some sort of like that internal system of going, And sometimes we'll catch it and sometimes we won't and we'll just let everyone. And that'll be a good reminder for later that she's super welcoming and that's cool. So we've gone with skills. Number four, I think that this is something that like teachers, parents, all of us need to lead with is when we're working with ADHD, we go in with conviction first. If we go in with a correction first, our kids, like for the parents listening, like have you had those years where your child really excelled at school and perhaps like, I don't care about academic stuff, but like really had a good relationship with their teacher and they enjoy going to school. And then you get a teacher that didn't establish that connection, and you, all of a sudden you've got problem after problem after problem. That is because our kids are connection kids and they need to feel that connection. And it's the same at home. So when we're talking to our kids, and even if something's going spectacularly wrong, and believe me, I spend my fair share of time up at school and having these discussions with my kids, my goodness. If we go with connection first, we always get a better outcome. If we go in with that correction, it's doomed from before we even begin.
I think because to drill down or deeper into what you're saying, what I think you just identified is ADHDers feel chronically misunderstood because they also don't really understand why am I doing the things that I'm doing? Why am I forgetful? Or, whatever the thing is, they don't understand it either. But I think one of the things that is so frustrating is when someone tries to tell you what they think your motive is or what you were thinking or why you did that, it's enraging because it always comes with like a negative or nefarious kind of, you think I'm being rude or you think I'm being disrespectful or you think I'm like trying to be this way. And so that chronic feeling of being misunderstood is, I think, something that we're always fighting against with within ourselves and then with other people. And so, if you have a teacher who sees you, or a parent who sees you, who gets you, who always is giving you the benefit of the doubt, who's always giving you the most generous interpretation and saying, like, say with impulse control, like, bud, I know that as soon as those words left your mouth, you regretted it. I know that as soon as, or you hit, or you threw the thing, or you broke the, TV, I know that as soon as it happened, you didn't like that either, bud. because I know you're a good kid, you're just having a hard time. Or I know that, I don't know. It's just like that framework of saying, I mean, then that's something I teach all the time as well, that you always want to do connection instead of correction. Because I think the other part is a lot of people don't realize how often an ADHDer is corrected. And in one of your other podcast episodes that I was listening to the other day, I think you mentioned that quote about how many times an ADHDer is corrected. Do you remember that? I can't remember what it is off
I
the top
can't
of my
remember
head.
the stats, but it is like significantly more. Like, I think it was something like 120,000 more corrections by the age of 12. Like, it's like significant. And this is why we see that, like, kind of throwing up of our hands. Like, and even the development of RSD, like rejection sensitivity dysphoria, this is the breeding ground for all of that stuff. And and the hidden meaning of it is that you can try harder out of ADHD. And that's not what we're about. We're saying you need to train differently. So we're trying to give our kids, essentially the hidden meaning for themselves as well. It's like we're trying to learn, teach our kids to recognize won't from can't as well, and teach our parents and teach the teachers to recognize won't from can't. Because if we keep leading with they won't, like it's some sort of them just deciding that they're not going to participate, or deciding to throw that challenging behavior, or deciding. Like that's not where it's at. I've got to tell you a personal story if that's okay. So I had a call from a teacher last week, and they were like, "This is my high schooler. They're breaking pens in class and spraying ink all over everyone." And I was like, "How many times, like pens? How many times is this happening?" So I'm asking
Like
questions.
snapping the pen?
Yeah,
Like,
snapping the pen and then splishing the ink everywhere. And the teacher was quite good about it, because obviously we want to keep a really positive relationship with our teachers as well. Like, these teachers are working hard, right? So I was like, "How many times is this happening?" And they said, "Like, happened 3 times now." And then today they didn't bring a pen, so they asked to borrow my pen, and then they snapped my pen and sorry. And so I had to say, "Look, I'll have a chat, and we're gonna handle this, because when things come up, we handle it, right?" So
Love
we're
it.
gonna have a discussion about it. So the first thing I do when my little guy comes home is I have a chat. "Hey, mate, what's like establish connection for? How's your day? Have that connection moment first, and then go in with like, I noticed I've heard a little bit of feedback about the pen situation. And I, like, you can tell me a little bit about what's going on for you in that moment." And anyway, through that drilling down and having that discussion with him, it came out that just the content was just too hard. So what he's doing is trying to get out of the class because that subject is hard for him. So what do you do when you want to get out? Create something you need to go and wash your hands for, right? And you create a bit of
Brilliant.
a mess. I mean,
That's
that's
actually really smart. That's actually a
smart.
really great adaptive response.
It is great, right? So, but now, had I not had that conversation, I'd just gone in with discipline to for which I hate that word. But if I'd gone in with a consequence straight away, right, I would never have found that out, and I would have just yelled at him about the stupid pen. So what I did is I talked to his teacher, I arranged some extra support on that subject, and I bought that teacher a whole box of pens to make that up to that situation. But I wouldn't have known had I not gone in with connection first. Because if I had gone in there with, "Why are you breaking pens? Like, you know better than that," rah, 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 he would have just shut down. He wouldn't have talked to me about it, and we will still have broken pens.
And that is a case study that speaks volumes across a lot of things, but definitely around connection over correction. And I'm a big, 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 big teacher of that too, in saying to parents, if you don't have a good relationship with your kid and you don't have connection, they ain't gonna tell you that they're at a party right now and everyone is drunk and they don't know how they're going to get home, or they've made a bad choice in some way and they need your help to get out of it. Like, they're going to wing it and they're going to navigate it on their own. And I mean, that's at the extreme level, but going down to this level of the pens, it's like, what an opportunity of you doing like exactly what you and I both teach, which is the behavior's the iceberg, and you zoom down and zoom out and look out what's going on beneath the surface. Because you could have bought him a bunch of fidgets, you could have done a whole bunch of different things, but by meeting him with a compassionate heart and going, "What's going on with the pens, dude?" Like, that enabled him to, because, and he wasn't shamed. So that enabled him to open up. And how great, too, that he was able to reflect and notice in his body, or to notice, like, it's because I'm actually overwhelmed because the content is too hard. Also, why did he say that? Like, why was he able to articulate it? Because you have a connected relationship. If your whole history had been consequences and discipline and strict and shamey, he wouldn't have told you. He would have said, and just would have sat in his little shame hole. But you've already done the like legwork or the foundation to have the kind of relationship where he can be vulnerable and admit to you, the content was actually really hard. I was feeling stupid. So, I mean, you then probably made the deduction of how he was getting out of it. But what a cool story. And also your observation of won't versus can't. You could have looked at that situation and gone, he just won't stop breaking pens. He won't. I mean, I have parents all the time that in our first session, they'll open with something like that. He won't stop breaking pens. And I'm like, is it that he won't or that he can't? And you got that immediately that no, this is just that he can't. And we got to figure out what that's about. Awesome. Okay. I love that. That was number four. What is five?
Five is simple. Five is that try differently. Okay, so we're not going to try harder. It's so important, and this leads into every system that we would ever create for anything.
Yes.
If you don't need to try harder, you're trying hard enough. We're just going to try differently. It doesn't matter how it looks to others. We're going to try differently. So a great example of that, if you don't mind me sharing,
Yeah,
is
go.
like brushing teeth. I was working with a family that. Their little guy had a lot of problems with brushing his teeth. Didn't like it. We were looking at barriers, so we're always looking at where the barriers are, where the friction point's coming from. Obviously some battles we let go because we don't need to fight every battle, but this one was, had consequences for his health, and so we thought, yep, this is we need some scaffolding around this. And so we looked at the barriers, and we were consulting the child and with the parents as well. Now the parents had assumed that it was a sensory issue. Now they had decided because he had sensory processing disorder that it was the feeling of the toothbrush. Okay. Now this is not where the barrier was. And I want to like highlight that because we do this all the time as humans. Our brain looks for reference points and we're like, that is why I know my kids. I do it all the time. I still watch myself. It's so annoying that I do that. But I'm like, that is why they have this problem. So I'm going to go and buy all the different toothpaste and we're going to find one that we like. We're going to try all the different toothbrushes. And, it's not where the barrier was. The barrier was that the toothbrush was actually this little guy would come downstairs and eat breakfast, and then they would get him to go back upstairs to brush his teeth. Now, that was in the going back up was the part where the barrier was. Also, the fact that the toothbrush was stored in a drawer. So it wasn't in line of sight, but it was also the barrier of physically walking upstairs. We didn't like that part, and we wouldn't have known that had we not collaborated with the child. So what the solution was that the child actually came up with is they were quite good. They already had the pattern established that they sat down to eat breakfast, which, for a lot of families, that's a step that they also need to work on is that whole, having a mouthful, running around the house, doing laps, thing that they often bring to coaching. But is that we would keep the toothpaste on the center of the dinner table, of the dining table. And so the toothbrush toothpaste sits there. That's just where it lives. Right, that's honoring how the how what his brain needed. So he ate breakfast and straight away he brushed his teeth. Now it didn't have water, it didn't have whatever. It was just that action, but that was enough to satisfy both the parents, the health requirements, because we know that the action of brushing is what's actually important there, and the child to have a system that had a bit of legs because we check back in on our systems. Right, this is like the one thing that we do really well in the membership is we're constantly checking back in on our strategies. So it removed enough barriers to make it a successful system. And there is a bit of a limiting belief around people with ADHD. They often tell me that I can't establish new habits. I tried XYZ before and that didn't work. So now they get this limiting belief thing. I want to really reassure people that that has not been my experience with any of my coaching clients. They can actually establish new patterns. I don't love the word habits. But they can actually establish new patterns. They need a little bit more support and they need a bit more tailoring to establish the patterns. But the good news is they tend to hold on to patterns longer than neurotypical people. Like a good example of this is mobile phones. Now, people weren't born with a phone in our hands. But yet, turns out not a lot of people with ADHD lose them. They lose them once or twice, and then we're really good at knowing where those are. That is a pattern that we've established because it's we've been able to develop that pattern. Same with handbags. Same with we're all running patterns. Like when you brush your teeth, how many times you rinse and spit is like a full-on pattern. Like I do three. I don't know why it's three, and if I do two, it feels off. Something's wrong. Now that is perfect example of a pattern that has been established that I do three. And we can, use that and use that part of the brain that runs those patterns because we're all running patterns. It's just whether they're helpful patterns or like unhelpful patterns. And we can use that. I want to reassure people that that limiting belief of like, I can't do that throwing the hands in there. I've tried that before. No, what we tried before wasn't the right thing. That's just information that it wasn't right. That something was off about it. We need the right thing.
I think you're right too in highlighting that it's like to me we're not asking the right questions, or it's like I have to ask better questions to drill down and figure out what is it that is the roadblock. Like, 'cause like you said, they were assuming it was sensory and why he wouldn't brush his teeth, but it was actually more of a logistical thing and not wanting to go back upstairs by himself. But that is it. So I think it's more like if there's something that I keep having the same problem with, it's really trying to drill down what is actually the beef with that. Like, what is my problem with that? And then once you identify that, and then you can take all of the shoulds out of it, then you can sort of see, because I, you would imagine a lot of people would go, we shouldn't have to have his toothbrush and his, toothpaste on the kitchen table. Like, that should be in the bathroom. But like, they're shooting it and that doesn't
For
help. So
sure.
by going, no, we're just going to do what works for him. And then he has the, the visual cue and da da da. But you're asking different questions. I don't want to say better questions, but it's like asking different questions to drill down to what is actually stopping the pile up of they can never remember their lunch, or they can, whatever the thing is, what is the actual crux of it. So I'm going to play them back to you and looking at my, I was taking notes while you were talking. So you tell me if this is right. So one is learn more about ADHD and how it impacts your family and everyone uniquely. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep. Number two, low hanging fruit, what's easy for your family and in your environment. Tailor the environment and to suit the individual. So yeah, there's not a blanket ADHD way or a, yeah, there's no blanket sort of stuff. Is that right? Is that one all? Yep. Okay. Three, something isn't working. That's how you know if this isn't working because you're repeating or doing it more than once. All behavior is communication. So what's the skill that we need to build? So the lagging skills, unsolved problem. Is that all spot on? Did I miss anything there?
You
Okay.
are nailing.
Four is correction versus connection. Adopt the mindset of it's not that they won't, it's that they can't. And I'm going to go in with the generous interpretation, you're a good kid having a hard time, and prioritize connection in the relationship to then support them rather than just correcting them. Anything else on that that I should say? And
Perfect.
then, okay. And then five is try different, not harder. Stop the sort of whipping yourself of we need to be better, they need to be better, they need to listen more, focus or be more responsible or whatever. We got to figure out a different way. I love that.
I want to also just bring in here that we're consuming more content about ADHD than we ever have before, right? Like there's a media storm around ADHD. And I there's part of me that really loves that when it's credible information and people are more educated about ADHD than ever before. But what I really want to move away from is this quest, this searching for ADHD. This is what I did in the start of our journey, like searching for information and move towards action. So what a coach does essentially is drives action. That's what we're trained in. So we can consume content, but what are we going to do with it? So filling up our brain, awesome. We're learning about ADHD. We're learning about how that's point one. We want to do that. But there's a point where that is now like we're always learners, of course, but we've now filled that bucket. And now we need to do something with what we've learned. And this is the part that we do well in our membership. So we're doing body doubling sessions. We're doing those practical things. Like we're doing the planning our Christmas. We're planning out
Love
the
it.
whole year on Sunday. We're doing all of these steps. We're implementing the strategy. We've got to really move to what are we going to do with what we're learning? Because we're getting those 74 gigabytes of information, right? But what we want to do is not just let this, like what I'm encouraging you to do is don't just let this be another podcast that you listen to. Do something with what you learn. Like your podcast is full of the most incredible facts and information. What are we going to try? Just pick one or two things. The right one will stick out to you, and you don't have to remember all of it. Just pick one thing. That's what I'm going to try. And then it tailor it to your family. Like experiment with it. Be like, it's not black or white. Like it's just information, right? So we're just going to give it a go. We're going to have a play around with that and see what we need for that and what we can take from that and take action on what we learn. Because I feel like we're consuming so much content now that we're kind of getting stuck in this paralysis bit of like, oh, because I see this in parenting. So parenting, like people often come to me and they're like not confident with their parenting style. So they flip-flop like between gentle and then strict, and then we get dysregulated. So we just default to how we were parented, and then we start saying things to our kids like, you do it because I told you so. Like, you know, I'm taking away the iPad. No, have it back. I've got to, you know, like I'm too busy to do that. And so like it's like we get all these confusing messages sending and we're confused. Everybody's confused, right? So it's the action part that we need to take, because through action comes confidence. Through action that you discover what works for you. And so that was like my last little point there about, you know, really motivating you to try things and give it a go. It doesn't have to be perfect. We're not going to get it perfect the first time. I can guarantee you that. That experimental mindset.
I love it. I love it. So on that, or good segue there, if people want to take action and they want to engage more with you, doing any of the variety of things that you have, like it's a playground of amazingness, I think, for ADHDers, all the things you offer. Where can people start to find you, on socials, website, all that jam? And then if you want to just say a little bit about how action looks, like how does that look in your world of your programs and membership and stuff?
Great question. So my website is thefunctionalfamily.com. So you can go in there, check those free blogs. You'll see all the different things that I offer. I've got a big support group on Facebook. It's a private group called ADHD and Family, The Functional Family. So have a look at that, join that. It's a really great, beautiful, kind community. And then there's all different things that people can work with me on, depending on the age and where they're at in their journey. So we've got the program that's for parents of primary school age kids, new diagnosis, that's going to step you through all that scaffolding you need. So, you know, like this is the modeling the systems that are really coming in. We're educating you about ADHD. And then there's private coaching, of course. I do parent mentoring, I do adult coaching, because sometimes parents will be like, hey, I just need to work with you one-on-one first. And then we will go into parent mentoring. What I'm kind of famous for is the parenting stuff. That's what I tends to be more my jam. And then we have the membership. And the membership is what we do is we just tackle one thing a month. So we're doing like, you know, example, you know, like morning and evening routine. So we will go in and have a look at that. You'll get a workshop and we'll be talking about tailoring it for the ADHD brain and what works for a lot of families and what things definitely don't. And then the next thing we'll be doing is a body doubling session. So the following week we do a body doubling session. This is where we're actually creating, like I'll give you a template. My love language is templates.
I
Give you a
love
template.
it.
We're all doing it together. It's a really great group. And then there's another level of that membership where it also gets support. So if you need that extra support, you know, you've got me there coaching you through it. And so there's a whole host of things. There's also the ADHD Family Podcast, which is my free resource, which I'm very excited that you're going to be coming on and sharing all your amazingness with my community. And it really is when people are thinking about ADHD coaching, think about it as the how. Like, right. So we help you discover the how. And there's like the why and how. And the why is so important. Like people need, especially people with ADHD, really need to understand the why. And we need to work. All the therapists need to work together to give everyone the right support. I mean, we're chronically undersupported ADHD, but sometimes we need the how to, or we need the how a little bit first to create capacity so we can be in a position to understand the why. Because we, if we're so burnt out and we don't have any time, we feel like we're constantly wheel spinning and not getting any traction on anything. Sometimes it's easier to go for that environment thing first, and then we have a bit of capacity, and we can then go and be like someone like yourself and get that why and really understand and really get that support. So it's kind of like all the like beautiful therapists like us working together, or a coach and a therapist working like us together. It's perfect. That's what we all need. We want to throw as much support and different times for different families. Like you don't have to do all of this stuff at once. Like don't be like me and do the 30K thing in the first year and burn yourself out with all like running everything and all at once. It's about like going, okay, what's coming up for a moment? This is what we're going to handle first, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. It's not supposed to be overwhelming.
Yeah. I agree with all of that, and I love that you are a guide on this path for so many families, 'cause it's a lonely place for a lot of families, like it was for you when you walked out of the doctor's office. Like, it's definitely a lonely place for a lot of people, I think, especially when they're starting. 'Cause it's like you don't even know what you don't know. You don't even know what to ask. You don't even know what the options are. So I think that's such good work that you are bringing to the world to just ease the suffering and to just lessen the suffering for so many people. That's big work and huge, because it's legacy stuff too, right? Like, it's you're teaching parents who then teach their kids who then teach their kids, you know? Like, that's really cool. Oh, so fun to chat to you today. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing just all the stuff that you've learned along the way, and just all the validation. Like, that's something that I'm really taking away from this conversation, is you are validating of the ADHD brain, and you don't see it as a problem. You see it as a different, unique brain that just needs different supports.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you'd love some strategies that actually work with strong-willed and neurodivergent kids, Prism Perspective could be exactly what you need. Go to prismparents.com and discover a community where strong-willed children are understood, and you finally get the support you've wanted. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.